listening.
To Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Boy, did you guys miss a discussion. We may yet talk about it. The use of the English language and how far can you extend things like grammar and pronunciation before you've gone beyond the creative envelope and simply make a bad impression on the people you're speaking to. So that's something we can talk about in our different open forum stuff. The phone number is 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. Hold on a second. Okay, that monitor is not in a good place. Today is my birthday. So, in celebration of my birthday, if you wish to help me celebrate, I ask that you go to kpft.org. Or, even more directly, pledge.kpft.org. Make a contribution to Think Wing Radio on KPFT. I would consider that a great birthday present for anyone out there who wishes to help me celebrate 60 freaking 5. 60 freaking 5. I gotta tell you, time passes faster the older you get. It would be nice if it went the other way around, because wouldn't it be great if the closer you get to the end, the further away it feels? But no. A week feels like a day. A month feels like a week. A year feels like a quarter. And my mom is 93, and for her, we've talked about this, time goes by like a blur. It's really a remarkable and intellectually, scientifically fascinating thing that seems to be universal. I hear a lot of older people talking about it, and until you get old enough where you start to sense it, it's hard to really grasp it. 713-526-5738. Help me celebrate my birthday today by going to pledge.kpft.org and choose Think Wing Radio for the show and help support KPFT. It is one of the very, very few tax-deductible birthday presents you can make. Okay, enough of that, at least for now. Some things that have come across my notice over the last several days, and I know there was a debate between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. I'll be honest, I didn't catch it. I've heard some of the discussion about it. Some people say Hillary, quote, won, unquote. That seems to be a consensus. It's not that Bernie... I'm just telling you what I heard, okay? I'm not making a judgment here. Egberto is making faces. That's why he's going, he doesn't like Hillary. From what I have heard, it's not that Bernie came off badly. They just feel that Hillary nailed some of her talking points. So I'd be interested in hearing some opinions on that. 713-526-5738. An article that I ran across that I found really, really interesting, because it really has broader implications when you think about it. But the title of the story is A major new finding about the impact of having a dad who was drafted to Vietnam. Apparently some scientists, they considered this essentially these people who were drafted or not drafted, people born in 1951, 1952, which, my year. And the question is whether the people who were drafted had different life outcomes multi-generationally from people who were eligible to be drafted that same birth year, but were not. And what they found was that there is a greater likelihood, if you have been drafted into the Army, that because you lose early year professional time, early year professional opportunity, you come back competing against non-drafted people who have already found starter positions and established themselves during the time you were at war. When you add in the emotional trauma, the psychological trauma, the physically lost time, and then the fact that these men came back older than their peers who had already started in the job market, they were earning less, which meant that they were in perhaps less desirable neighborhoods, which meant that their children were growing up in perhaps less desirable neighborhoods, which gave them fewer opportunities socially, economically, professionally, and that the children, the first generation children of Vietnam War vets over their lifetimes, were likely to earn 15% less than their peers. Now, I don't know how many of you have heard of something called epigenetics. Epigenetics is a really, really fascinating new science. In a highly oversimplified way, it is almost equivalent to cutting off a mouse's tail, and then the subsequent generations of that mouse have tails that are cut off. That's a radical oversimplification. In reality, what they have found is environment affects epigenetics, which is, I've got to have a guest on this. I actually know somebody. I've got to have them on. Epigenetics is kind of like a layer of genetic material overlaying, in a sense, your normal DNA. Your normal DNA is inherited. Your epigenetic material is impacted by things like early childhood hunger, early childhood disease, and you have people who have experienced physical traumas of one kind or another, who then have children whose children in one way or another show signs of the parents or even the grandparents' hunger, abuse, diseases, and it can actually have a multi-generational effect. There's a kind of social epigenetics. There are the kinds of things that society looks at typically as a straight line. You are born, you go to school or not, you get an apprenticeship or not, you go into business or not, you know, and there are branches in the tree, if-then flowchart stuff. But I don't think that we really think about the multi-generational impact of, let's just say in a broad sense, social experience, and how that can have a multi-generational effect. I was listening to a show on the way in, on not this station, because I thought I was on this station. I wasn't. But they were talking, a woman was talking about having done genealogical research on her family. And her family had a lot of slavery in her background, some white masters and such. But as a black person, she had a lot of slavery going back generations and generations. And we've talked a little on this show from time to time about race and the long-term impact of the slave experience. And one of our callers coined the phrase post-traumatic slavery disorder. I don't think I had heard it before then, so I'm going to say he coined it. And this goes back to a form of social epigenetics, that the impact of something that we experience doesn't end with us. It gets translated down into many generations and impacts an enormous number of if-then possibilities on the flowcharts of life. Anyway, the phone number, open forum. You can discuss anything you want. I'm just sort of, I guess, birthday philosophical. 713-526-5738. We do have a caller on the line. Scott, you're on the air. How are you doing tonight?
Thank you. Yes, well, I watched the debate Sunday night with various other people, and I think Bernie impressed me better than Hillary did that night.
Okay.
There was other times when Hillary impressed me better, but she seemed a little defensive, and I thought Bernie talked to him. He was well-spoken. Yes, but I still have not decided how I will vote on that. I do plan to vote early, probably the first day of early voting, which will be in the middle of February.
Absolutely smartest thing to do. Now, you realize that the Texas primary is a beauty contest.
Yeah.
You need to go to the caucus to actually matter.
Well, I am going, I am mainly interested in the local races.
Ah.
From what I've heard, Hillary seems to have it made in Texas, but I don't know. But that's just my general impression. Maybe I'm mistaken, but...
I think that there's no way to know this early. You know, she was the presumptive nominee in 2008, and we know how that worked out once you actually had caucuses and primaries.
Okay, now I am talking about the Texas delegation.
Well, she's certainly the more conservative of the two. So
yeah.
To the extent that Texas progressives will tend to lean a little bit more toward a more electable, I'm going to use the term advisedly. Here's the thing, and you can comment on this. I'm old enough to remember the 1972 election.
Yeah.
I was 21. It was actually the first election I could vote in because voting age at that time was 21. And McGovern was the Democratic nominee, and he was trounced. It was one of the biggest landslides in history that Nixon won.
Yeah.
And I think the only state that he carried was South Dakota, from which he was a senator. And, you know, I like Bernie. I like Hillary. I think that they both have a lot to offer in their own way. And my fear is I could be happy with either one being nominated, okay, from a personal standpoint. I could live with either one of them. My fear, though, is that if Bernie was nominated, it would be McGovern again.
Well, I do think Bernie is promising too much at once, and either Republicans will rake him over the coals for promising to spend too much money, or if he did get elected, he would have a lot of trouble getting much accomplished.
I think all they would have to do is hammer him with the label socialist, 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 and that itself would be an issue for a lot of so-called undecided voters.
Okay. Well, Democrats need to hammer the Republicans about they're trying to purify capitalism more and more. It's really doesn't benefit most people. It wouldn't.
You know, I've started thinking of calling myself a social capitalist.
Okay. Yes, they're going more and more toward Ayn Rand without atheism.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
The worst of all possible worlds.
And I think the most telling comment I ever read about Ayn Rand was that her novels really don't say anything about children.
That's interesting. Whoops. I think. Okay, hold on a second. I think, Scott, I am sorry we cut you off. If you want to call back, I'll try to get back to you. Just so you know, you're listening to Thinkwing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I'm Mike Koenig. My guy on engineering is Egberto Willis, who has his own show Thursdays from 3 to 4 p.m., Politics Done Right. And today is my birthday, and if you want to help support KPFT, you can make a birthday present donation to them for me. Go to pledge.kpft.org and click on the show, Thinkwing Radio, and then make your donation. And I would consider that a happy birthday present. One of your very few tax-deductible birthday presents. Okay, I see, is it Alan?
Yes.
Hi. Hello. I'm sorry, pronounce your name for me?
That's correct.
Alan. Okay. Hi, you're on the air. How are you doing tonight?
Very good. I have three inspired comments, so I'll run through them very quickly
here.
First of all, you led off with the concept of time seeming to go by as we get older faster. And I put a mathematical model to it.
Really?
I'm 4 years and 11 days your senior, so I've been considering this for some years.
Uh-huh.
The formula works like this. For every 5 years of your life, the day seems to go by 1 hour shorter. And you don't notice this very much when you're a child. You know, you start out 24 hours a day as a baby. But when you get to middle age, say 50 years, well, that's...
So a 24-hour day, you almost perceive it like a 14-hour day.
Right. And when you get to, you know, 110, 120, which is the possible lifespan, I mean, it's going by like a strobe light then.
Hmm. Okay. I remember when I was five and a year was like an eternity.
Yeah.
It's like, is it Christmas yet? Is it my birthday yet?
It probably has something to do with how quickly our neurons fire or something like that. It's just like when you run a movie, slow motion versus regular speed and so forth, you get more frames per second.
Mm-hmm.
If you have fewer frames per second, but you play it at the regular speed, everything seems to be going by faster.
Well, you know, the old movies, the really old movies, like The Silence from the 20s and the 10s and the double aughts, they were filmed mostly at about, of course, hand cranked, but they were filmed mostly at about 16 frames per second. And they are typically run at 24 frames per second. And that's why everybody seems to move so jerky. If you ran them, and occasionally you see them reproduced at their original speed, restored at their original speed, and it's a little blurry because possibly the transition or possibly the film was slower at the time, the emulsions. But, I mean, it looks much more normal, and it's almost a shame that we always picture people from 100 years ago as moving quick and jerky. It's like a real misperception. It affects how we think about them. I would like to see those films broadcast at their proper speed. So anyhow, go on to the next subject.
Your day seems an hour shorter for every 5 years you've lived.
Okay, next topic.
Next topic. You were speaking about grammar and so forth. I'm a professional proofreader and I know quite a bit about the language, but there's one thing that rubs me the wrong way. I hear it all the time on the radio, is somebody will say, I'm not going anywhere. And what they mean is that they're staying where they're at. They're not going to tune away or leave the place, whatever.
Yeah.
But the term, I'm not going anywhere, can be easily interpreted to mean I have failed. What they really need to do is add the word else. I'm not going anywhere else, or I'm not going away.
You see, now that's where stuff gets interesting, because that's where computers have more trouble understanding language than humans. Humans have a better sense of context and how it shades meaning. You know, there are so many homonyms, words that sound alike.
They did a pretty good job of it.
I'm sorry, say that again?
The Weather Service, NOAA Weather Radio, they've gone over to an automated male or female voice to read the current readings and the forecast and stuff like that.
Yes,
and,
but
it usually does a pretty good job. Used to be that they would confuse wind with wind, but I think they got that bug out of it.
Well, I mean, that is actually, and I'm going to use the term advisedly, that is a simpler program, because all it's doing is taking written words and simply pronouncing them. There is no understanding in that program. Whereas you have heuristic programs, what they call self-learning programs, that the goal is that the computer is able to parse out context so that a phrase like I'm not going anywhere could mean I'm staying here versus I'm not going anywhere meaning that I'm failing professionally.
Siri, you don't understand me.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, third topic, and then we're done.
The last thing I wanted to say is the broadcast media and even PBS is making a mistake, I feel, in that they are constantly referring to Republicans this, Democrats that, Democrats this, Republicans the other, and red state, blue state. You know, they are perpetuating the duopoly. And what's unfair is you're giving free advertising to those political parties by mentioning what their candidates said against each other, and they are totally omitting any other political parties or independent candidates. They're not even mentioned, and the public doesn't even know they exist. I meet people all the time who've never heard the Green Party. So that's one thing that I would like to see change in the media. Is to be a little bit more fair because you're giving that free advertising every time they supposedly are reporting news, but really they're just buffing up their advertising money from those who can afford to pay it.
Let me talk a little about third parties. I mean, it's a topic that does come up from time to time, and I seem to be in disagreement with a lot of third-party advocates, people who are green, people who are libertarian, actually members of the party trying to advocate the party. My feeling for a while has been that the third-party possibilities are going about it backwards, okay? You've got them running for president and vice president and governor. And what I think they should do, and what I think many people would be interested in seeing, run for mayor, run for attorney general, run for something local. Show us how you'll govern. Show us what green means or what libertarian means. Get elected to local positions and show us how you'll govern. We're not going to elect a green president because we have no idea what this person is going to do. They're an unknown quantity. They're just off the radar screen. Start like you have a couple of cities in the United States. One of them actually has a guy in, I think, in the city council from the so-called New Whig Party. You have someone, I think, in Oregon or Washington who is a socialist who was elected to a city council or mayoral position. And I think that's how third parties, if they want to get established, must start at the local level and show what that means in terms of governance and policy.
I agree with you, but I still will go along with the higher level offices just for the publicity. And if we could just get the media coverage and have, you know, the League of Women Voters type of debates and so forth, instead of a duopoly setting it up just for themselves.
But that is the point, I think. That's one of the points of running for local office. Someone running for local office is more likely to get local coverage than some obscure person running for national office when you've only got a certain amount of media time for doing a news report. So, anyway.
Anyway, thank you very much for the opportunity and continue to think wing.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Take care, Alon. Okay, we have an open forum, 713-526-5738. And Scott has called back.
Yes,
Scott, you're on the air. Sorry about that.
Yes, yeah. Well, I guess I was getting ready to wind things up.
But yes, you were.
But
we cut you off.
The most important thing, goal in this year is to reject the Republican vision, which is getting more and more economic laissez-faire. They don't believe in an economic safety net, which is an essential thing.
They never have.
Industrialized democracy.
Yeah, they really never have believed in a safety net. They've been against Social Security and Medicare and unemployment insurance. They've been against every social program from each program's inception.
Yes, and I will call the Democratic Party successful when the Republican Party goes back to Eisenhower.
Eisenhower today would have to be a Democrat because
yes,
he'd never be nominated any other way.
was ready to make peace with the New Deal. Said that
pro-union.
Pardon?
Pro-union. He was pro-union.
Well, yeah. Okay.
He and one of the biggest public construction projects in history. He got the interstate highway system going, initially for military reasons, but it was the biggest public works program in American history at the time.
But, you know, I think Republicans can play a part in being skeptical of government.
Yes.
I think there is good reason to be skeptical of government. Bernie may embody too much confidence in government.
The best options are usually somewhere around the middle, although the far right has gotten so far to the right that the best options may be a little left of the middle.
But the Republicans offered a drug-free America. That's pie in the sky, isn't it?
Yeah, that hasn't worked out so well.
Yes. That was the Reagan administration. A president who said government is a problem, not the solution, and war on drugs is one of the strongest evidence of that.
Well, you know, Republicans starve government programs and then say, you see, government doesn't work.
Well, yeah.
So they create the very problem that they then point to and say how that's failed.
Okay, although they want a big military, which is government. They want a big prison industrial complex. That's government.
Well, they want to privatize it, which
they
I think
are selective.
Is... Yes.
But even if prisons are private, they are very much an arm of the government. And I could vote for Bernie Sanders because he did broach this issue, brought it into the presidential campaign arena. Hello?
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
Yes. Yes. That's why I might vote for Bernie Sanders. But on the other hand, I feel a little safer with Hillary Clinton.
I feel Hillary... I'll tell you, honestly, I would love to see a Hillary-Bernie ticket.
Yeah.
It would be... I've said it would be the oldest electoral ticket in American history with an average age of like 71.
Yeah.
But I
okay.
think that the virtue of a Hillary-Bernie ticket is Hillary is more electable,
yeah.
But Bernie will draw out the Democratic voters.
Bernie is about 12 days older than I am. Hillary is about 6 years younger.
Okay. How old is Hillary now, like 68, 69?
Well, she was born in 1947.
Okay, so she's 4 years older than me, so she's 69.
Yeah, that sounds about
and
right.
And Bernie, I think, is about 71 or 72, something
well,
like that.
Bernie must be 74 because he was born in September of 1941. I think it was, might have been, maybe it was the, I was born the 20th. Maybe he was born, he may have been born the 12th or the 8th.
Well, I don't know if we're going to worry about quibbling over dates. I think 1941 is the number.
Yeah.
So that would make him, what, about 75, 74,
yeah,
75?
74, because I am 74, and we were born the same month.
So that's, but that would be interesting.
Yeah.
Marco Rubio, by the way, this young Turk who thinks he's ready to be president after having
yeah.
spent very little time in government and mismanaging his personal finances, and apparently had not been paying attention to the fact that the government of Michigan poisoned the people of Flint with lead. Apparently this was news to him.
Rubio that governor of Michigan?
No, Rubio is a presidential candidate. Apparently this
yeah.
was news to him.
Oh, okay.
Which is really pretty pathetic considering
so
what a big story it's been for how long. Pardon?
He did not know. You're saying he did not know about the trouble in Flint.
He apparently is only recently aware of it.
Oh.
Which is a very, very sorry commentary on himself in terms of what he's paying attention to while he's running for president. So it's like, why do you want to be president? Because I don't like poisoning people with lead in the water. Oh, I didn't even know we were doing that. You know, it's like, what kind of a president is that going to be? He's not paying attention to life-threatening issues affecting hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah.
So, all right, I'm going to go on to the next
okay,
caller.
Thank you
so much, Scott, and I appreciate your calling back. You're listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I am Mike Koenig. My engineer is Egberto Willis. And today is my birthday. And if you want to help me celebrate, go to pledge.kpft.org, sort through the list of programs to Think Wing Radio and make a contribution to support KPFT. It is probably the only tax-deductible birthday present you can make. We have open forum, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. And our next caller is Jerry. You're on the air. Jerry, how you doing tonight?
All right. How you doing?
Okay.
That's good. I don't know. I think that Bernie, you know, I don't think it's surprising to me that Bernie's as popular as he is with Democrats, quite frankly. Yeah. And all that. And the fact that he's got, like I mentioned before on another show, the fact that he actually shows up relatively well against a bunch of the Republican field right now is also kind of surprising. And all that. I think, you know, maybe some people are changing their minds about some stuff. I don't know. But
I think partly it's because the media has covered Bernie so little, and the Republicans have pretty much ignored him. They have not yet hammered him on the things that they will obviously hammer him on.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, they do fear really, really well, and they'll inspire fear about Bernie's policies.
Oh, yeah. No, I think that's true. I think that's true, but they're going to try to inspire fear about anything on the Democratic side anyway. They're going to sit there and say Hillary, you know, is, you know, they'll try to demonize her like they've done with Obama somehow or another. God knows they've got plenty of material to work on, or they think they do anyway.
You know, they've been demonizing the Clintons for 50 years, 40 years anyway.
Yeah.
And I think at this point, people have pretty much made up their minds about Hillary. I don't think there's anything that they can drag out and accuse her of or lie about her about that would strike anybody as a surprise. I think when it comes to Hillary, for the most part, minds are made up. I think it's a matter of getting people out. I really agree with you on that.
I think that she's a, you know, people kind of have some idea of what they're going to get with her.
I think it's a matter of getting people out to vote.
I mean, it's
a truism that the only poll that matters is the poll on election day.
Yeah.
And that's where I think Bernie could be a very, very important asset, because I think that they have less ability. I think the Republicans have less ability to attack him as a vice presidential candidate than they do attacking him as a presidential candidate.
Yeah, but the problem is, you know, quite often the person who's the vice presidential candidate's kind of like being groomed to supposedly become the president.
Yeah, but I don't think it ever really affects the election. I don't think that the choice of, I mean, we had Dan Quayle, for crying out loud.
Well, that's true.
Dan Quayle may have been the stupidest vice president we have ever had. Now, if George W. Bush was the worst president we ever had, Dan Quayle was probably the stupidest vice president we ever had. I mean, the stuff that he said, and I mean, I was alive to remember he said it. So sometimes, like, I've seen Republicans try to attribute some of these remarkably stupid comments to Al Gore or some other things.
Yeah.
I mean, he actually said things like, Mars is so Earth-like that we could colonize it because it has an oxygen atmosphere. And it's like, no, it has a carbon dioxide atmosphere, and that atmosphere is only 1% of the atmospheric pressure of Earth, so it would be a choice between whether you would suffocate or explode.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy was stupid. Ignorant. I'm not going to say stupid, but certainly, certainly ignorant.
Yeah.
You know, there's an old saying that stupidity is forever. Ignorant is a correctable condition.
Yeah.
Unless you're willfully ignorant, and then you're just stupid.
Yeah, well, I think that's true. But, you know, what amazes me is you hear Republicans now proposing something that they're not going to go for. You know, there's two or three guys, and one of them says it's not a VAT tax. Of course, this is the scariest person on the Republican side, of course, Mr. Cruz. You know, he's got a VAT tax, and he's saying it's not a VAT tax.
I'm sorry, what is a VAT? I mean, I know what a VAT tax is. How is he referring to value-added tax? How is he referring to a VAT?
He's calling it something different, but it's basically the same thing.
Calling what? I don't understand. What is a VAT tax currently?
He's got a tax. He's got a way to create, you know, basically to get income into the or make money for the government, and it's essentially a value-added tax, but he's sitting there saying it's not that.
Well, you know, for, God, I think it's for 20 years, one of the things I have advocated is a progressive VAT. In other words, instead of just a flat sales tax, which is regressive, that, for example, on automobiles, as the price of the car went up, in small increments, the amount of VAT tax would go up. So let's say if you could buy a car for under $10,000, there'd be no VAT.
Yeah.
At $11,000, maybe it would be a 0.1% or 0.5% VAT. And as it went up in hundreds or thousands, it would go up by tenths or point fives, so that by the time you got to like a $100,000 car, maybe you'd have a 20% or 30% VAT tax.
Yeah.
But it would be incremental, as opposed to the luxury tax that was once imposed on yachts, where it was just at a certain size, it was like, bang, you had this enormous luxury tax, and it practically destroyed the American yacht building industry. So, I mean, I think the incremental value, for example, you go into McDonald's, you might have a little or no VAT tax, whereas you go into something like America's, you might have a 5 or a 10% VAT tax. But it would be progressive based on perhaps menu averages or some such. And the IRS could set up a table of these things so that instead of spending as much time auditing, some of their time would be creating the tables for these VAT taxes across certain industries and certain types of products. And the virtue of that is that it would bring in revenue from cash incomes that are not declared, and it would mean that savings wouldn't be taxed unless you spent them.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that that should replace an income tax. I think that you should then have an income tax on incomes maybe starting at $50,000 a year. Anything under that would be just the progressive VAT, and over $50,000 you would start to then add a progressive income tax starting at some low rate because they're already paying VAT taxes. Does that make sense?
Yeah, up to a point.
Up to a point.
I think that a VAT tax would be pretty regressive, though, in terms of, you know, it seems to me like poor people wouldn't, you know, if suddenly everything went up 5 or 10% because of a VAT, or maybe not everything.
Well, a VAT is nothing but a sales tax, which is why I'm talking about a progressive VAT that actually is graduated depending on, you know, the price of the things you buy, the kinds of things you buy, the average price perhaps of the place that sells. So, you know, Neiman's might have a higher VAT than Walmart. So, yeah, I get the regressive potential of a VAT.
You'd have to be able to apply that to imports and stuff like that.
Sure.
And people who buy stuff overseas and all that. Basically, you would have to sit there and sit there and tell everybody you've got to declare, in essence, all your income and basically any kind of large purchases you make or anything like that. And I can imagine some people not liking that too much.
Well, but, no. With a VAT, you would just buy something and the tax would be paid. You don't have to declare anything. But with a progressive VAT, it takes into account that any flat tax is automatically regressive.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that basically those people would go around and buy somewhere else where the tax was lower. Everybody goes tax shopping.
They would have to go out of the country.
They would have to go out of the country, but then we would lose that tax unless we had some kind of system to keep track of what they spend their money on and then their income.
Wouldn't worry about it. At the borders, we have people that go to Canada to buy things where the U.S. dollar is worth more. They go to Mexico, like you've got people in San Diego buy gasoline in Mexico where
the gas
is cheaper.
Yeah.
So around the perimeters, you're always going to have this. But, you know, for the most part, people balance a lot of things. They balance price. They balance value, which is not the same thing. Most of the more expensive sales are based on a relationship, even if it's a momentary relationship with a salesperson. If you like the salesperson, you're much more likely to buy. If you have a favorable opinion of the store, you're much more likely to buy. There are a lot of things that go into a buying decision. Even patriotism could go into a buying decision, as long as the difference is not too drastic.
Yeah. No, I agree. But I'm just saying, though, that you're going to ultimately have to deal. You know, basically, you're going to see people who are going to try to evade that at any cost.
Sure.
And
but there would still be the IRS. There would still be the IRS. There would still be income tax. There would still be progressive income tax.
Well, you know, they want to get rid of him and one or two of those other guys are actually talking even about dumping the IRS.
That's so stupid.
Well, I happen to agree with you, but I think Cruz is the scariest guy in that whole field. I could almost live with a Trump or some of those other guys. Cruz.
Would you rather be shot or hanged is the question. When you start to compare Trump and Cruz, I mean, that's almost the choice. Would you rather be shot or hanged?
Well, you know you know, basically that Trump, like you said, doesn't have that filter between his brain and his mouth and everything. You kind of know where how he's feeling at that moment, at least anyway.
Cruz is much more calculating.
Cruz is incredibly calculating, cold. He's incredibly cynical. You know, the guy's a total elitist, and yet he presents himself as being some kind of great man of the people.
Yeah.
And, you know, and everything. I just can't, you know, basically, if you want a candidate, if you want somebody in the White House that's more cynical, more arrogant than, like, Boy George, then guess what? You need to vote for Cruz.
You know, you raise an interesting question that perhaps will become a conversation topic. If you had a gun to your head and had to choose, would it be Trump or Cruz? By the way, I want to say, I think you're one of the people that was talking with me, and I'm going to get to Doug in just a moment. Hang in there, Doug. I think you were one of the folks that we were talking about the world oil business.
Yeah,
I have been talking to a gentleman by the name of Ed Herz. He's been on the show before. We had a little chat today, and it's possible that he will be on the show this coming Monday.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about some of the complexities of what's going on in the oil industry with pricing and fracking and exporting. And he's a guy who's been in the industry for a very long time. He's affiliated with UH, and it should be an interesting discussion if I can get him on the show next week.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Okay.
I just wanted to make one correction from last week. I mentioned Project Mohole. I made it sound like it was M-O-L-E-H-O-L-E. It's not. It's M-O-H-L-H-O-L-E.
M-O-H, Mohole.
M-O-H-O-L-E, yeah.
Okay, all right.
And I forgot about that, but that was remembering stuff that I read like 35 years ago or
Understood.
Something.
Understood. I do that all the time.
I wanted to mention that. And actually, there was funny. It's funny because I actually looked at that, and there's actually been some other things since then where people have gone down deeper. The problem is that they encounter water down there. And also, it's a lot hotter than they expected.
Yeah, plus the pressures. I got to let you go, Jerry. I'm going
to
get on with the next guy. Thanks so much for calling.
Thanks.
Take care. Okay, you're listening to KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I'm Mike Honig. On the control board, I've got Egberto Willis, who does his show, Politics Done Right, Thursdays from 3 to 4 p.m. And it is my birthday. If you want to help me celebrate, go to pledge.kpft.org and give KPFT a birthday present on my behalf. Go to Think Wing Radio for the show and then contribute whatever you feel you can. Doug, you are on the air. Thank you so much for holding on.
Hey, man. How you doing?
Okay. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. I wanted to, if we could switch topics a little bit, I want to talk about my police reform.
I'm sorry. What kind of reform?
Police.
Okay.
Forming the police.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I think it probably caught a lot of people's attention, but, you know, the terrible tragic case in Cleveland of that 12-year-old boy, Tamir.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Tamir Rice. Yeah, he was shot in 12 seconds after interacting with the police.
Yes, yes. Okay. I mean, I've kind of been thinking about this. I called you before a number of weeks ago. You know, I was talking about, like, you know, the body cams would be a good step forward, but it's probably not going to be enough. And, I think the training is the problem. That the police are kind of trained to see everything through this prism of the worst possible outcome, you know, and then it kind of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, kind of the person who thinks, you know, whose only tool is a hammer, you know, thinks every problem is a nail, that kind of thing. It'd be almost like if a doctor, you know, there's certain kinds of funky, you know, lung diseases and stuff, and certain kinds of funky types of pneumonia. If that was drilled into their head over and over again, then anyone with these kind of vague set of symptoms, they would view that as this funky type of pneumonia, and they would over-perceive that, all right?
Well, I actually have been of the opinion, and it's strictly speculation, I have not been able to get someone to talk to me who is intimately involved in police hiring, police training.
Yeah, but see, that's the point where we, especially at this point, cannot defer to the experts. I mean, we as citizens in a democracy, as imperfect as it may be, you know, we need to be the experts. We need to certainly listen to them, but you know, we need to take, okay.
I give a lot of credence to experts because Hold on. I give a lot of credence to experts because I cannot know everything.
Well, nor can can I, nor can any of them.
So I hopefully, hold on, Doug.
Okay, yes.
So I hopefully find experts that I feel I can rely upon and then listen to what they have to say. And in areas where I don't have expertise, I have to rely on experts. I mean, that's what all of us essentially do, whether we think of it consciously or not. But I think there comes a point where you have...
You know, 50,000 different rejoinders. But,
well,
okay,
hold on. I'm not done, Doug. Hold on.
Yes.
But I think that there comes a point where you do have to question the experts when you have something going on systemically that seems to be a problem. I think it's time to start questioning the experts. Now, my theory has been, and I haven't had anybody contradict me, and there's sort of suggestions that I'm on the right track. I think that the police forces are probably very heavy in military veterans. It would make excellent sense, and thank you, Jerry. It would make excellent sense for ex-military guys, among the professional options they have after leaving the service, to go into police work. But I have spoken to a guy who used to be affiliated with JSOC. He's an Afghan vet. And he drew the distinction for me fairly clearly. And if I can remember what he said, it was basically that police are supposed to be trained to control and de-escalate a situation, whereas...
But often it's the opposite. The control part becomes escalation. Okay.
Yeah, the military, the idea is to terminate a threat. If you can terminate a threat without killing somebody, that's great, but be prepared to terminate a threat. So when you have guys coming, hold on, I'm almost done, and then I swear I'm going to let you talk.
No, that's fine.
So, Egberto was shaking his head. We go through this all the time.
Okay, go on, man.
All right. I guess to wrap up the point, what I wanted to finish saying is that when you have guys who have been trained and indoctrinated in a certain way of handling potential threats and situations, and then these guys go into police work, or as you say, it's exactly the opposite. It's really hard to untrain somebody who has been indoctrinated so successfully, and, you know, great soldiers, but maybe not such good policemen. Your turn.
That conclusion, great soldiers, maybe not such great police officers. Because I don't like where it's going, where, you know, it seems like we're throwing down on veterans.
No, I am not down on veterans, but
I'm not either.
But the equivalent is that some companies want to hire trainees rather than experienced people for precisely the same reason. They don't want to have to untrain bad habits picked up in other companies. They want to train you to do it their way.
Okay.
And so, I mean, this is the exact equivalent of taking a guy who's trained to kill when necessary and then trying to turn him into a guy who tries to avoid killing whenever necessary.
I mean, we could run the numbers, but like the Cleveland case, you know, I don't think either one of those two police officers were veterans or weren't recent veterans.
No, I do not think so. So I'm talking in the big picture.
Good article on either Slate or Huffington Post or something like that. And they were saying it's two things. It's this kind of thing that you see everything as a potential threat,
mm-hmm.
You perceive the worst possible outcome, and combine that with this take control, kind of like, you know, TC baby, TC, take control. And that, you know, and so instead of like the Cleveland case, instead of de-escalating, it's the very opposite. They took an ambiguous situation, and instead of like observing them from the perimeter or calling the local security guard who was at that park or probably any of other five potential options, they ramped it up. You know, they drove up the car right next to the guy, and then it's suddenly a crisis. And then you get this thing, well, you know, right at the brink, what do you expect the police officer to do? Well, you know, I expect, you know, him or her to be smart enough not to put themselves right at the brink. You know.
Yeah, it's like these guys, that these police that pulled the car up to within like 5 feet of Tamir Rice.
Yeah, that was a bad decision.
That was an extremely bad decision, because then you are literally confronting the possibility of a live weapon 5 feet from your face, and that changes the calculus.
And the police officer driving did a very poor job of protecting his partner in the passenger seat, because, you know, once the guy in the passenger seat opened up his door, then you're that 5 feet away or 6 feet or 4 feet or whatever
right.
The heck it was. So the driver did not protect his partner, which is, you know, a pretty, as I understand, a pretty fundamental thing. Let me just say one more thing, and I'd like to let you go.
Okay.
I mean, you've been very patient to me.
And you as well.
You're so man. Okay, on the expert thing, and again, we might have to just agree to disagree. I would lay money that most of us, probably, you know, 95% of us have had that experience of going to see a doctor. You know, he was someone that, you know, studied, you know, in their profession 12 years or whatever it is, and the doctor's just a terrible listener.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the doctor might give a prescription, but you walk out of there with not much confidence whether this prescription or what the doctor's recommendation is really going to solve your problem, because the guy or gal did such a poor job, you know, on the social skills of listening. So, you know, I think, you know, maybe even more so in a modern society, we should question experts confidently and all the time.
I will give you, because you went onto the medical side, I will give you a personal experience without going into too much detail. I had a medical issue.
Sure.
It was really annoying. It wasn't life-threatening, but it was persistent and chronic and really annoying. And I went to, I think it was 3 or 4 different doctors, and they all said, oh, there's nothing we can do about it. You just have to take some anti-inflammatories and, you know, sorry, just nothing we can do about it.
Sure.
I finally went to one guy, and he said, oh, yeah, it's a thrombosed vein. No problem. We can take care of it next week. And it's like, seriously? You know, I've been getting this thing looked at for like 3 years or 5 years, and I've gone to at least 3 other doctors, and you're just saying, sure, snap of the fingers,
okay,
no problem.
Okay. Right.
So, I mean, when you get back to the expert question, you know, it's the only thing that I ever quote from Ronald Reagan is trust but verify.
All right, well, that's a good quote on that, man. Okay, man.
So maybe we'll just leave it at that.
You're okay. All right, man.
Thanks so much, Doug.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Good night.
You too. Okay, you're listening to Think Wing Radio. We still have a little time on the show. We have an open forum, open line, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. It's my birthday today. Help support KPFT in honor of my 65th birthday. Pledge.kpft.org. Okay, some other stuff in the news. You know, many years ago, I heard someone, and I wish I could find the original quote, but I once heard someone make the comment, ask the question, really, when did we stop referring to Americans as citizens and start referring to them as consumers? NPR did an interesting story. It was called A Stinging Report on Pandemics Makes Louis Pasteur Look Like a Prophet. I've got links to this. I have a website, thinkwingradio.com or thinkwing.org, and I put links to pretty much everything I discuss, plus a lot of stuff that I never get to. And this article is on there. And there was an interesting point that was made. They were talking about how we don't seem to be as well equipped to handle pandemics as we should be. And this is what I considered. I heard this on the radio and had to look it up. This is the line that I think was the most significant to me. Quote, if an outbreak like the Spanish flu of 1918, which killed more than 50 million people today, were to happen today, let me start that over. If an outbreak like the Spanish flu of 1918, which killed more than 50 million people, were to happen today, the economic damage would be in the trillions of dollars. Now, I find that to be the equivalent of a mixed metaphor. In other words, 100 years ago, what we were focused on was that the flu killed 50 million people. 100 years later, we're simply focused on the fact that it'll cost trillions of dollars. And that's the kind of thinking that creeps into your mind when you stop thinking of people as citizens and start thinking of them as consumers. Everything boils down to the buck. So we're no longer worried about, you know, whether something equivalent to the Spanish flu, when the world population was maybe 2 billion people, and 50 million died from the flu, and now the population is over 3 times that, close to 4, and proportionately that would mean that an equivalent pandemic might kill 250 million people. 250 million people. Think about that. But we're not worried about killing 250 million people. We're worried about the fact that it would cost trillions of dollars. This is a subtle perceptual change in thinking and seeing the world that I think has incrementally and subtly changed the way we weigh things. I think that it's part of that conservative value versus loss equation that we are hearing so much. You know, everything is about the buck. Everything is about the profit. Everything is about how it's good for business. I'm not running down business. Economies are what they are. We need them. We need money because money is a much more efficient way to exchange goods and services than barter. I was actually watching a show the other night, Bush People or something on Discovery, caught a few minutes of it. And there was this very, very complicated process of trying to barter for a generator. And they had to go to like three different people. It's like one guy wanted firewood, one guy wanted DVDs. And they had to go around and do all this bartering in order to get this generator, as opposed to simply having cash and saying, okay, how much? $100? Used generator? Sure, we can do that. That is the point of money. Money replaced barter because it's just much more efficient. But, you know, when the money becomes God and the lives of people are no longer in the equation, that, I would see that almost as a psychosocial sickness. And I think that that's something we need to talk about. I don't know if anybody wants to take a chance on calling with like 1.5 minutes left in the show. 713-526-5738. If you have something you can say in 30 seconds, please call 713-526-5738. I actually think that that was the story that I actually was going to start the show with, and somehow it just didn't work out that way. Another thing that's going on, apparently, what's his name? Ken Paxton, the already indicted attorney general that we elected in Texas. Apparently some more stuff that he may be indicted in, because in Texas, we don't care if we elect indicted people. I just run out of words at that point. Let's see. And then there was also some discussion about changing the name of Reagan High School. Now, you see, as a relative newcomer to Houston, I thought that it was like the Ronald Reagan, whereas it was apparently a guy by the name of John Reagan. Oh, we have a call. All right. If you can be really quick, like we're talking 10 seconds. I'm not even going to ask your name. Go. Say what you have to say.
Yeah, happy birthday.
Thank you. Cool. I love it. Okay, next guy. You've got about 10 seconds.
Well, one thing that bothers me is I'm reading in a lot of...
All right, 10 seconds. You're going to have to really sum this up.
That people won't vote for Hillary Clinton if she wins the nomination. I mean, you know, liberals, you know, Democrats that believe in, you know, normal human things like...
Okay, I apologize, man. I got to let you go. I am sorry. The music is playing. Okay, thank you so much. You've been listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I'm Mike Koenig. I'll leave you with this thought from William Simon. Bad politicians are sent to Washington by good people who do not vote. Have a great week.
Mahatma Gandhi, apostle of peace and nonviolence, demonstrated to the world the effectiveness of nonviolent means for bringing about profound social changes and lasting peace. In his spirit, the Mahatma Gandhi Library was founded in 2002 with the mission to increase public awareness, especially to the children of Gandhian philosophy and teachings, highlighting the universal values of peace, truth, nonviolence, and love.
Right?
The library has an exhaustive list of books, artifacts, and an exhibition on wheels consisting of authentic pictures depicting the life and times of Mahatma Gandhi. You can visit the library or find it online at gandhilibrary.org. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.
There has never been a better time to donate your car to KPFT. When you contact the KPFT car donation hotline, you will do something great for this community. Call 1-855-573-8227 to donate or find out more information. KPFT is the only radio station of its kind located in Texas. It broadcasts music, news, information, and cultural programming from national distributors, as well as locally produced offerings and more. Your donated vehicle goes to support this unique voice for yourself and others. Have Have an old car taking up space in your driveway? Donate it to KPFT now. Just call 1-855-KPFT-CAR or visit kpft.org to donate your old vehicle to support KPFT. Your contribution is appreciated. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.